The Scrabble Go Guide to Learning New Words. Quizzical, your dad's face when he hasn't got enough vowels. Skeptical, your mom's face when you try to say small is a word. Belligerent, how your brother feels when he doesn't win. Vocabulary, what you all build when you play Scrabble Go together. Everyone's a winner with Scrabble Go, the fun brain training game you can play with family wherever you are. Available on Android and iOS. Download Scrabble Go today.
What do you see when you dream about the future? Over the last few months, dreaming about the future has developed a whole new meaning. What will this new normal look like once the COVID-19 pandemic is over? What will life look like next month, next week, or even tomorrow? Right now, I'm going to invite you to look even further into the future. And no, I don't mean about dreaming about flying cars and conducting meetings with holograms. I'm not talking about that. I'm asking you to take a moment to look deep within yourself. What's your vision for your future, for your 60s, 70s, 80s, and beyond? I know it sounds like I'm doing a chart countdown on the radio, but I'm actually being quite serious here. 3 years ago, before I began running a podcast production company, I worked in the aerospace industry, assembling planes, believe it or not. Every day, before work, I'd throw on my high visibility gear. This was important for safety at work. I'd carry a pair of safety glasses with me, and I would clock on at the same time every day. I'd greet my fellow workmates, hello, also in high visibility gear and safety glasses. We would find our workstation, be assigned work, and begin. In that space, I was able to leave work at work. But I knew that I needed more than what that job could offer me. I needed to pursue a passion, create a company culture that values self-care and personal development. And I needed a way to really invest in myself. Essentially, it was there I realized that I needed to set myself up for the future and create space to love my life in the meantime. We spend our first 20-something years on this earth, ultimately preparing for our careers, for our 30s, 40s, and 50s. But what about after that? We don't really think about that beyond investing in our superannuation or 401ks. Preparing for our 60s, or for many, retirement, is so much more than investing in your 401k. If you want to continue to grow and not become complacent, stagnant, or get stuck in your ways, you need to be thinking about your health, your mindset, and your overall quality of life. My guest today is Dr. Ronald Kaiser, who works as a director of psychology at one of the world's leading headache centers. His other full-time job is creating innovative, positive approaches to helping people of all ages maximize their potential for success and happiness. Oh, and did I mention that he's 82 years old?
I consider this overtime. I was given, you know, a certain life expectancy. If I'm going beyond that, then I want to be able to win at that.
Ron's lifestyle would be considered super active at any age. He regularly works out at the gym, takes yoga classes, goes to concert and sporting events, you name it. He's a total badass. He refuses to go into retirement and spends his days doing nothing but running out the timer. Now, he's developed the Mental Health Gym website, works as a positive psychologist, and created goal-achieving psychotherapy.
So I found that by really building in things like hope, optimism, things of focusing on tomorrow rather than, you know, on the misery of pain, that we can, you know, really achieve great success.
The point is, my friends, it's never too early to start investing in yourself and your long-term future. If you want to cultivate a lifestyle today that focuses on elevating your mindset, creating a habit of positive self-talk, setting lifelong goals, eating well, and exercising regularly, you'll be setting yourself up for a joyful and fulfilling rest of your life.
The genie show, oh, our lonely days are gone. It's magic, I know. I think it will be fun. Come on, hello. Like we knew all along. It's time.
Dr. Ronald Kaiser, welcome to the Ginny Show.
Great to be with you, Ginny.
Ron, I have to say, in my life and in my work life, you know, there's so many people that I'm blessed to be surrounded by who are so inspiring, but you in particular inspire me because you have this attitude about you and this vision about you that is such a zest and appreciation for life. And, you know, if we all could embody that daily, how lighter and brighter our lives would be. So I'm very, very excited to have you on the Ginny Show. So Ron, I think a part of this energy and this rejuvenating that you preach really well and live really well, I think a lot of that has to do with positive psychology. Can you talk to me about what hooked you in to that in particular?
Yes, it's positive psychology. It's a fairly new branch of psychology. And historically in psychology, just like in medicine, we were more interested in treating disease and getting people to a certain point and then kind of forgetting about it. Historically, abnormal psychology classes tended to be the most widely followed ones on college campuses and with enrollments and so on. But the reality is that, you know, you get to be a certain age and see a certain amount of stuff going on. And as a psychologist, I treated many people who should be happy and really weren't. You know, the reality is that no matter what would happen, if somebody was started out fairly miserable and then they got a promotion, got the attractive spouse, got a lot of money, they just became like a miserable rich person or, you know, and you know, that's not what you should be working for, to the best of my knowledge. So when positive psychology first started around the year 2000, when books first started getting published, it immediately kind of rang a bell with me. At that time, and I still am working very often with headache sufferers who headache, unlike, say, if you've got a herniated disc or so on, headache is a disorder of the brain chemistry in most cases, which means if we can get you into the appropriate chemical balance, you don't have to have that as a lifelong problem. You don't have to live with the pain. But one of the things that works against it is the fact that neurochemically, the same brain chemical that's active in headache is active in depression. So if people are pessimistic about things, that you can work with them all day, and some of the medications really won't work for them. So I found that by really building in things like hope, optimism, things of focusing on tomorrow rather than, you know, on the misery of pain, which is miserable, that we can, you know, really achieve great success. And as I began to explore this a little more, as I began to work more with it, I began to see some things that a lot of people weren't saying that seem to work. And, you know, if you're successful, it tends to kind of reinforce itself and you kind of keep doing it. So I became hooked on it. I think I was a positive psychologist before there was positive psychology, but certainly in the last couple of decades, that's been a big focus of my life.
When you talk to people, I'm really, really curious when you said that the same kind of neurochemicals in a headache are similar to what's in depression. So it's almost like you could say, and this is my non-medical knowledge talking here on, you could almost say that being in a state of depression is the equivalent of the pain that you experience when you have a headache, just felt in a different way.
Absolutely.
Is the way that we talk to ourselves, the way that we think, the way that we kind of surround ourselves with positivity, how have you seen that impact people's state of mind as a medical practitioner?
First of all, I believe that people's thoughts really precede their feelings, so that what you tell yourself is very important. It's the basis for cognitive behavioral therapy as well as positive psychology. And one of the things that I learned fairly early is if we can interrupt the negative thinking process, we can make some significant changes. And sometimes it's just a very simple thing, such as when you're facing a challenge, do you ask yourself what can go right? In other words, I work with patients who I can ask them what seems to be a fairly simple question as we deal with it, what can go right in this situation? And it'll be like the most amazing question in the world. I never thought of it. I can tell you all the things that can go wrong. I've actually had patients who thought I asked the question the wrong way. Did you mean what can go wrong? It's just not, you know, in their makeup to think in terms of what can go right. So that's one of the things that I think is real important, the way that we speak with ourselves. The other thing that I think is fairly critical is to avoid what in the field we call catastrophizing, taking something to the worst possible outcome. So that, say, for example, it may rain today, or I may run late, or whatever it may be. Is that really something that's too bad, or is it terrible? Running late may be terrible if you're applying for a job against other people who are competent and are going to get there on time. But very few things are terrible in the same way that some tragic occurrences are. So I think really being able to kind of de-emotionalize the intensity of what we tell ourselves is a very common thing. And the other is just the notion of having the positive mindset of being able to go into a situation feeling a bit like a winner, feeling like I'm in touch with my awesomeness, just feeling that, you know, whatever else is happening, I'm bringing certain strengths into the situation. And that has to be accounted for, too, because it's not just the external stuff that goes on, but what am I bringing into the situation that's going to make things better? And most of us have a history of some successes and some really good things.
I'm curious to know, too, Ron, having that you've said that and you've kind of affirmed what I had been thinking, during this time of quarantine, you know, everybody's forced to go inward literally and figuratively. I'm curious to know what your thoughts are on what that is doing to our state of mind. Because now, like what you said, you know, to kind of make that shift into turning a potentially negative or catastrophic thought into a positive one, you've got to interrupt it. Now we have seemingly all the space most of us have to interrupt it because we're at home. How do you think the psychological impacts are at the moment with people with going through this pandemic? Because it's not just a one-off occurrence. We're going through this collectively. So to have support and that positivity around you may not be as readily available as it used to be in pre-COVID times. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, there's several things that I can think of in response to this. First of all, I think we've got to be able to recognize, why are we doing this? You know, in other words, it's kind of like, you know, why are we saving money? Why do we put money into the bank? It's so that we'll have it at some point. I think, why are we doing this? It's so it increases the chances of our maintaining our health. It increases the chance of controlling the spread. The reason is not all negative, that there are positives behind it. It'd be nicer to have a lot more choice in the matter, but the fact is that you know, there is a very positive reason for it. Secondly, I think that it is important to recognize that there are three main principles that are necessary regardless of where you are, whether you're able to be out freely, whether you're working, whether you're not. And that's one of the critical ones is one that you mentioned. The importance of social connection just can't be diminished. It's really important to recognize that whatever else we're doing, we have to stay in touch with other people. There are lots of ways of doing it, although some of us may not be used to it. You know, in other words, we go to work, there's a structure for us there, we may know a few people, but you know, now that we're in a situation where some people may not be calling us, we may not be interacting with others on a regular basis, it's a great time to learn new skills. So I think that it's very important to, one of those skills can be to reach out and call others. Reach out and connect over the phone, over Zoom, over FaceTime, lots of different things. That should really be part of your task, part of this new normality. The other two areas are to keep your mind active. And there's no easier time now to do that, because we have not just books, but courses on the internet, different ways of learning kinds of things. And critically important is to maintain some level of exercise. I've recently seen that chiropractors and physical therapists have seen kind of a boom in their business if they're open and available for it, because people are doing things at home, like sitting in an easy chair all day with their feet on an ottoman, and they may have a laptop on their legs, on their body. They're sitting in abnormal positions. They're spending time on the cell phone with their heads down, so on. It's really important to counter it, to counter that, because just the normal activity of going to work, going up and down subway stairs or whatever, it is healthy for your body, and you got to replace that some way. So the overall concept is one of saying, hey, this is my job now. Maintaining my health, maintaining my connection with others is my job. Now, if my boss tells me that I have to have this produced by 5 o'clock today, that's my job. Now, I've got to tell myself the right things that are going to make me effective. And again, keep in mind the basic thing, we're doing this so that we can stay healthy.
There's a really important thing that you mentioned there, which is about how you perceive things. Why are we doing this? And what can we do in this time to really keep our mindset fresh and focused? And one thing that I really want to talk to you about, Ron, is, you know, you're the author of Rejuvenaging, and there's some great, great tips in there on how you can, you know, live a life well into your 70s. You're 81 or 82, I believe.
82 now.
Wow. I met you when you were 80. This is amazing, Ron. And also the fact that you just launched your podcast last year, and it's just amazing what you can achieve and keep achieving.
The Ginny Show. Her dream is to play Rafiki in The Lion King. That's because she acts like a baboon.
Hey, sleepyhead. Why so sleepy? Oh, it's because your mattress is a bag of potatoes and scrap metal. You should try a Nectar mattress. With award-winning layers of comfort, you can sleep easy knowing you got incredible value. Mattresses start at just $499, and you get hundreds of dollars in accessories thrown in, as well as a 365-night home trial and a forever warranty. Go to NectarSleep.com.
The Ginny Show. We tell you things we probably shouldn't.
I'm curious to know how you influence your mindset every day. What are your non-negotiables that you do for yourself in your self-care practice that keep your mindset really focused and allow you to interrupt any of those negative thoughts that come in?
Well, I just mentioned some of them. You know, I think it's important to, on if not a daily basis, then on a pretty regular basis, to maintain an exercise program that includes regular walking, but also particularly as you reach this age where everybody has arthritis and so on, that you include stretching and weight training and stuff like that. We know that loneliness is right up there with things like sedentary lifestyle and smoking and obesity and so on, in terms of being a real killer in the aged population. So it's very, very important to not allow that to happen. And for, again, for some people, if they've been living their life depending on work as their primary form of socialization, it may be learning a new skill. You know, again, I learned podcasting, and I think we have to recognize being able to become more outgoing or get involved in volunteer activity and so on is really a skill for somebody who hasn't been doing that. So, but you know, what's the worst thing that can happen? I grew it up in some way that is going to be not able to be repaired. I mean, you know, I think it's very important to not be catastrophizing about any of this stuff. And again, there's been no better time to be able to keep the mind active. And I think committing oneself to say going to read a certain number of books on whatever format I may use, whether it be, you know, printed or online or whatever, that read a certain number at a particular time. I have all kinds of free courses, low-cost courses, both online and connected with universities. I think one of the big problems is the fact that historically, we don't have role models of people in the 70s and 80s who are particularly active. When I was looking it up, and when I was born, the life expectancy for I don't know whether it was in general or for a male child, was just under 60 years of age. So, you know, and then, and I was born like 2 years after Social Security Act was formed. So if your life expectancy is 61 and you could collect Social Security at 65, you didn't have to do much planning beyond that. Now, some of that, the life expectancy was affected by the fact that there were more childhood diseases in those times. So there were people who lived into the 70s and beyond, but you know, we didn't necessarily plan for that. Now, I think realistically, if somebody reaches the age of 65, they can anticipate 18 more years of, you know, of active life. I think also one of the things that we've learned in the coronavirus pandemic is that, and I know there are some tremendous nursing homes in the world, but your odds of, you know, just being able to stay healthy is built by strengthening your immune system and not having to go there for as long as you can. So, I mean, I think that there are just a number of ways of approaching things that if you start out with that assumption, with the recognition, hey, this is going to be a good time of life, what can I do to enhance it? I'm sort of working on a course and maybe the next book, trying to sort that out, the tentative title of Winning in Overtime. In other words, I consider this overtime. I was given, you know, a certain life expectancy. If I'm going beyond that, then I want to be able to win at that. And I think that's the mentality that you have, because you're either going to do that or you're going to be passive. And I just know in working with patients, even though we may think that, hey, that's great fun to be able to not have to do anything but or make a decision bigger than, you know, what TV show am I going to watch tonight, without even, you know, having a particular interest in which it is, but I don't have anything better to do. I don't think that's a high quality of life, and that's a lifestyle that's totally preventable.
I love that you said that you're working in overtime at the moment. That's such a unique way of describing this experience. And it kind of brings me to my next question about cultural shift, because you are a leader in a cultural shift at the moment, because you're shifting the perspective of younger people and how they see older people and how older people see themselves and their futures. Can you talk a little bit about that, Rod?
Well, one of the things that really got me into focusing on this age range, because again, I had been working primarily with headache patients much of my life. But one of the things that got me into focusing with it is that I saw people who were my age, as I approached the 60s, the 70s, that really were kind of just allowing the course of events to take their lives. There are things that you can do to avoid. There's some very preventable diseases of old age. Not all of them, and genetics play a part. But, you know, I remember there's a couple of events that stand out in my mind. Once my wife and I were with two other couples, and I remember saying something about, like, if I knew how much fun old age would be, I'd have grown older faster. And people didn't just disagree with me, but were really upset that I would even think something like that, that, you know, I've got these aches and pains and all this other kind of stuff. So that was kind of bothersome. And then I remember, again, as we were going out with somebody socially, and my wife had asked the husband, hey, what'd you do today? He said, nothing. And I'm going to do the same thing tomorrow. And I remember that created a real visceral reaction in me that, you know, so I felt that it was important to deal with people my own age in that regard. But the second thing is, we know about saving for retirement. That's kind of built into us from the beginning. Not everybody does it, and it's a lot easier to deal with crises than to do preventive stuff. Yeah. But I think that when I speak with younger people, I think that this is the equivalent of saving for retirement. Now, it's come easier for me to do that because working in a medical school and being in touch with the brightest young people on an ongoing basis, that's been my good fortune. And being able to have them accept me and vice versa, have some of them as being among my closest friends, is, again, a real blessing for me. But I think that it's important to recognize that when you're 20 or 30 these days, there's a real good chance that you're going to be 70 or 80 or 70 and 80 and 90 and maybe beyond by that point. And it makes no sense to reach that point and then say you have to decide, what am I going to do? I mean, there are people who will get a job, say, in their mid-20s, work for a company and be able to retire by the age of 60. So they're working for 35 years. They may actually live longer in retirement than they were when they were working. And to not prepare for it is really wrong. And that's why I try to encourage young people. And again, to the extent that I can be something of a role model by going to the gym with them, that I can interact with them socially and so on, I think helps get the point across.
It's amazing too that you say that, because I think, you know, someone in their 30s, I'm approaching my mid 30s now. And the other day, Ron, I saw my first gray hair, and it was a moment where I was like, oh dear Lord, my life is over. I've got to go see, like, it. Yeah. Exactly what you talked about at the start of this podcast, I catastrophized what was literally just a single hair strand. And then, like, over the course of 2 to 3 days, I was, you know, calling some of my friends up. I'm like, it's all over. It's finished. Like, you know, I've got my gray hair now. I'm the youngest in my family. In my immediate family, I'm, other than my niece, I'm the youngest. And obviously, I'm like, yep, the last one's gone down. But again, like, I was catastrophizing this moment. And then I kind of stepped outside of it and thought, you know what? You've barely lived half a life, Ginny. You know, really, I've barely lived half a life, 34. I've still got more years, touch wood, if I do follow your principles, more years left on this earth than I've already spent. So, which brings me to my point, what advice do you have for those 20 and 30 year olds like me who want to grow old with enthusiasm, but how would you ask them, other than financially, obviously you talked about retirement, that sort of thing, how would you advise them to prepare for the future? Because we're in this constant rat race, especially young people now with technology, myself too, like entrepreneurs, CEOs, there's lots of opportunities to create and fall into a rabbit hole of, this is my life. It's just work, 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 work. It's very hard to disconnect. So what advice would you have for the young people of today?
Okay. Well, first of all, just for yourself, I kind of have a feeling if you project into your 70s and 80s, how important you think that gray hair will be in your thinking at that time. So I think that, you know, it's very important to try and put some of this stuff in perspective.
Exactly.
Actually having to deal with the gray hair business, I mean, I'm long past having to deal with it. But, you know, with the beauty salons closed and all that, it's interesting to see the reaction of many of the people who pretended to not have gray hair for a long time, who are now having to deal with it, which I think is probably a little rougher than having to deal with a single gray hair in your 30s.
Yeah.
But just generally, the important thing, I think it all starts with the mindset.
Hmm.
Mindset, there was a great work produced by Carol Dweck, a psychologist at Stanford University, kind of popularized the term mindset, said that there was really two kinds of mindset. The fixed mindset, the kind of assumes that any characteristics are kind of inborn traits and you can't change them, so that, you know, whatever, you know, if you're 30 years old and you're not where you want to be, probably means you're at the lower half and you're going to be kind of mediocre all your life because you're just that kind of person. Whereas with the growth mindset, you know, the emphasis is on trying. It's learned from an early age to try and explore new things. And if they fall short, that's not terrible either. You know, so if you look at the notion of the fact, hey, there are things that, you know, are going to be challenging, but it's going to be worth it, you know, because you learn from everything. It's kind of like the same thing that we're going through with the coronavirus. I mean, you can look at it as, geez, I'm really held in at home. Or you can look at it, hey, I've been doing the right things to keep me safe. I've developed a branch of psychology that I call goal-achieving psychology or goal-achieving psychotherapy, which is an offshoot of positive psychology. And my focus is you should always have goals, intermediate ones and long-term goals. And then I think whenever you have a challenge, look at your reaction to it and say, how is that helping me get to that goal? It's hard to say unless you have the goals. So it's the goal. I don't think it needs to be a fixed goal because, again, growth involves changing. I mean, I probably would be a whole lot better as a writer and as a podcaster if I started years ago, but I'm probably a whole lot better than if I hadn't started at all. And I think that's kind of the mindset that I think people in your age range and younger and even older middle-aged people need to keep in mind. And to some extent, it's quite a challenge because nobody, for more people than not nowadays, nobody is making you do that. If you're working at home, if you're staying, you know, I mean, I get emails from people, then I look at the time when they sent it and I wonder, when do they sleep? Do they take time for themselves? I mean, I think it's important to recognize you are probably the most important job that you have. And it's important to, you know, if you buy a car and take good care of it, it makes no sense to not take care of the most important possession you have, which is yourself and your body and your mind.
And your life, really, right? When you think about it, it's such an important possession because the car will live on, outlive you, whether you drive it or not, but not the other way around. It's so true, Ron. Ron, you've dropped so many gems of wisdom. And at the Ginny Show, we like to talk about happiness and how people can get there. I know it's a big loaded question, but what is your definition of happiness?
Well, as you said, it is a big loaded question, but in many ways, it's kind of a simple question too. I think happiness means satisfaction with where you are, but not total satisfaction. I think happiness means that you have something to look forward to. I always tell people it's hard to be active and depressed at the same time. It's hard to look forward and be depressed at the same time. Happiness is sort of the opposite of depression. So if you've got something to look forward to, which you can't if you're self-satisfied or if you're passive. I think happiness is kind of being satisfied, but not totally satisfied. Having some goals. The not being satisfied doesn't mean self-criticism. It means, how am I going to make changes to make me happier and more achieving?
Great advice there, Ron. Ron, thank you so much for joining me on the Ginny Show. I feel that we've only skimmed the surface of what it is to be in the notion of rejuvenating. I do want to leave with a quote by George Bernard Shaw that says, you don't stop laughing when you grow old, you grow old when you stop laughing. So based on that, Ron, I will be young forever.
Wonderful, Jenny. I would expect nothing less from you.
Ron, please tell the good people of the Ginny Show where we can find you and your book, Rejuvenating.
Okay, well, my book is available on Amazon. I mentioned What Can Go Right, which was my earlier book. It's only an ebook format, but that's also available on Amazon. It's getting old now. It's from 2011. But Rejuvenating, I think, is pretty up to date and will be for a while. My website is called The Mental Health Gym. So that's www.thementalhealthgym. And if you join the gym, you can find out about other things that we'll be having, courses and so on. I'm also active on social media, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Twitter. I guess those are the main ones.
Also, make sure you check out Ron's TEDx talk called Aging Enthusiastically to Make the World a Better Place. We will put those links to his books and to his social accounts and the TED talk in the show notes. So Ron Kaiser, thank you so much for being on
the podcast that you that you play such a big role in, which is Rejuvenating with Dr. Ron Kaiser. Jenny is a wonderful producer, in case anybody is thinking about podcasting.
Thank you, Ron. I appreciate it. We're very, very honored to have you a part of the Ginny Media team, because I always say, Ron can do it at 82, you can do it at 27 or 34 or 44 or 64. No one's got an excuse because you're such an inspiration and you gave a TED talk last year too. So you're an absolute badass. Ron, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Jenny. It was a real pleasure, real delight.
I like a bed that's really firm.
I need something a little softer than that.
Rest easy. With the Sleep Number 360 smart bed, you can both adjust your comfort with your sleep number setting.
Can it really help me fall asleep faster?
Yes, by gently warming your feet.
Okay, but can it help keep us asleep?
It senses your movements and automatically adjusts to keep you effortlessly comfortable. Sleep Number, proven quality sleep is life-changing sleep. It's our biggest sale of the year where all beds are on sale. Save 50% on the Sleep Number 360 limited edition smart bed. Only for a limited time. To learn more, go to sleepnumber.com.